Before 2025's The Amateur, back in 1981, John Savage plays a mild-mannered Charles Heller, a CIA cryptotographer whose fiancée is murdered by terrorists. Charles takes justice into his own hands, armed with nothing but intelligence and obsession. He blackmails his way into the field, where he revenge turns into a deadly game of espionage, deception, and survival. He's not a spy, he's not a killer, but they made it personal. This week on Back to the Balcony, we discuss 1981's The Amateur.
Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, two titans of cinematic review. Sometimes right, sometimes wrong, but always captivating. Your hosts Antonio of the Cult Worthy Cinema Podcast and Justin Henson of the Movie Wire are here to take you back to the balcony.
So, dude, I don't know. This is one that watching the remake, I never watched the original, and this one made me go back and give some sympathy towards the remake. And we bash reboots and remakes all the time, but this is one where, I don't know, the remake improved on it, and everything that drove me nuts in the 1981 version, it improved upon. This one was a snooze fest, and it hit every point that I've talked about with you before in The Hitcher, where we have the conflict, we have the danger of just roaming around with nothing to do, and there's no filler, nothing interesting, no characters to actually care for. This one was a struggle, and what I appreciate about movie theaters is that it can get my attention. It forces me to have my eyes glued on the screen. And I told you this last week, when I have to seclude myself in my theater room, it's not a good sign. This one was about a two-attempter for me until I secluded myself. And I don't know. I wasn't a fan, but I'm curious on your thoughts because we really haven't discussed this one this week.
I think this one suffers from a lot of the same issues that last week's film did, Bloodline, where this feels like this was an adaptation of a very popular novel that probably was much better than the movie that came from it. And I think we're going to have a lot of the same complaints that we had last week. This movie does not know how to be suspenseful. It doesn't know what to do with these interesting characters and these interesting motifs. Because I bet the novel was very interesting. In order for it to be adapted into a movie, someone had to have liked it. It was a bestseller. Robert Littell was a big writer back then, especially of this kind of spy CIA genre. Very similar to like the Bourne novels, right? But this lacks any enthusiasm, any real suspense. And we're going to get into it very deep, I'm sure. My biggest complaint about this movie is the performance of the lead character, John Savage, as this guy who is not a tough guy. He is just a number cruncher for the CIA, right? And I think there is something cool about that concept where there is this revenge story from a guy who really is not trained in that field of the CIA. He works behind the desk. He's good with computers. He's not a gun guy. He's not a bomb guy. He's not a spy. And I think that is what is supposed to be the draw of this story. It's like a fish out of water kind of thing, right? Facing danger and facing espionage, but not really knowing how to counter it. I think the irony of the story is that the reason why he's allowed to live through this story, the reason why he doesn't get taken out right away, is something that Christopher Plummer says later on in the film. He's like, the only reason why you're still alive is because you don't know what you're doing. They don't know how to counterbalance this guy who's not predictable because he's not playing by the CIA handbook. That's fascinating. They do nothing with it, with the script, and John Savage does nothing with it, with his performance. Our critics get into it, but just like in our review of Hair, my biggest complaint of this film is John Savage. I just feel like he does not understand what this character is. And if he does, he is going against what the character is supposed to be and going with whatever instinct he thinks this character should be. And maybe the director just didn't know how to rein him in and get him to be what the story needed. That's where I think the biggest flaw of this film is. Everything else, like the snooze fest, the lack of great pacing, the lack of great action, a lot of that could be forgivable if you just had a magnetic personality in the lead. And that was my problem with the movie.
I think it's going to be a mixture of both, because there is a moment in this movie where we even get it in the remake that drove me nuts, is he's in the middle of a street. And we see this a couple of times in, I think, Russia, where we do this long pan around him where he's looking around and taking in the environment. And that, it, to me, is just laziness. Give me something with this character. There is nothing interesting that he says other than a couple situational pieces that we get in the first act. But he just kind of roams around. There is little to be said by this character. Savage doesn't give a good performance, so I agree with you on that. But there's really nothing for him to work with, because when he does speak, it's a very shy, it's a very held back piece of dialogue, and he doesn't do anything with it. But to me, if we listen to the 1 to 2 sentence deliveries, he really has nothing to go off of to really make it interesting. So, and we see that when we have to have characters be placed in that I don't even know what half the characters' relevance were in this movie that he meets, except for maybe Plummer's character and the female actress that I can't remember her name right now. But at that point, those are the two pivotal moments to kind of catapult him along. But we have these situational elements, and when we have all that filler, that's a script problem. And you're right, the original source material, you can go into deep emotions, you can go into his deep thoughts, but it's not translated on screen here. It is just, let's go to the next scene, let's go to the next setting, let's go to the next character, and Savage, just come on, come with me. We'll tell you what to do in this moment. So I just need reaction from you. That's what we need to, and maybe some suspenseful music in the post-production aspect of it. So there is really nothing to really move this character along or Savage along. And when it comes to Plummer, this is a character that is wasted. This is his character. He mumbles his lines half the time because he probably can't get the accent right most of the time. And there's, you can't even hear the dialogue coming from his mouth. So there is nothing in the written words that we can really hang on to, hook us, or really follow along with our main characters.
And he shows up 53 minutes into the film. He's got second billing. So I'm like, oh, great. Christopher Plummer is the villain. Kind of. He's one of the villains, but he also has like a deeper story rooted into the film that just doesn't feel worth the while, worth the wait, worth the watch to get to what he was doing. Now, he's magnetic no matter what he does, even if his accent is kind of muddled. Christopher Plummer just kind of, you know, owns the screen whenever he's on it. And that's a big problem with the movie, is that these side characters are a lot more interesting than John Savage is. Ed Lauder, who is one of the CIA guys who like trains him and eventually has to hunt him, that dude is like fun in anything. He's just very malleable in movies, and I really enjoyed what he did, and then he disappears for like almost the whole movie, and then it shows up at the end. The inspector is a fun character. Even like kind of like the bumbling CIA guys who are trying to like find the hidden trail that this guy's led, like the cryptography of it. That's the other part too. The mechanism of the movie, right? That this guy is into cryptography and ciphers. That's very interesting. It's almost like, what's it? The Da Vinci Code, right? I feel like that's a very interesting subject. They don't do anything with it. They do show some like, I don't know, proto-computer work and hacking. The dude hacks like a fortune-telling arcade machine at a barbecue place. I'm like, cool, that's going to come back into play. It doesn't, right? That's the biggest problem with this movie, is it's got so many interesting things that they just don't even bother to magnify. They don't bother to show how smart he is. And that's, again, another big problem with this script and this character, is that if this is like one of the best cipher guys in the world, in the industry, he practically uses none of his skills to get where he's going, right? all of his stuff is really fumbling around and relying on the other spies in Czechoslovakia that he's dealing with, like the Russian spies, the girl. Like, it's all just happenstance that he is finding his way to the people he's trying to take out. He's not using his ciphering at all. So why even make that a point of the story, right? He could have been anything. He could have been a clerk. He could have been a valet parker. It doesn't matter. Instead, they give him like this really interesting career and they don't do anything with it.
He uses CIA training to plant a bomb in an underwater bar pool thing. True. That was, by the way, that was a pretty cool death scene. But again, it's in the moment. We get scene to scene. Like, we change it from a city, then a snowy landscape. And there's really no explanation of the transitions of where he's going or why he's going. So this one is challenging when it comes to what his mission's going to be. What is his intent for the next scene? It's not really fully explained, or I'm just at falling asleep while they're explaining it, because we just kind of get tagged along from scene to scene with nothing interesting happening. And we're trying to wonder what his motivation is or intent is for the next scene. And we never really get that, or again, anything interesting to really make us pay attention to why he's going into a snowy mountain or going into an apartment building, what have you. So to me, it is very segmented. It's almost like watching a tourist slideshow of a vacation, of just going from scene to scene. And I think you're right. The biggest interesting part are the side characters on what their motivations are, because they have the best dialogue. We have Lummer, who has this mysterious likability to him, but again, they don't really do anything with it, and it's too late in the game for to have us really care. We have the female character that really does give us that mystery as well. All these side characters equal mystery, and we do nothing with it other than a final cliche moment at the end where there's a big fight scene, and it really I could care less about, because we don't learn anything about these characters and there's no build between the chemistry between them. And Plummer, I will give him credit on this, even though I hated his performance in this, is at the end, he seems to balance it out using his likability to make us really care about the outcome in the 2-minute interaction that they have in the final moments of the movie. So I'll give him credit on that. But at the same time, the direction never utilizes Plummer's on-screen likability.
And it doesn't utilize the full potential of what his character represents in the world of ciphering as well. Like, he is a guy when he's not, you know, being this KGB spy, he is a cipher cryptographer himself who is trying to prove that William Shakespeare's plays were written by Francis Bacon, which is a fun conspiracy theory that's been around for years. And how he's trying to prove that is by using like the ciphering of his works to show that there is a relevance between his iambic pentameter and Shakespeare's. That's really interesting. They talk about it for like 30 seconds, right? That's all they do. And like, that's such an interesting side piece to this character that's barely explored. I'm willing to bet that that's probably a big part of the novel as well. Why are we introducing all these really cool concepts, these characters, but they're not exploring them at all? And why are we spending so much time with like the broodiness of John Savage? That is another part that really weighs this movie down, is for every time there's an interesting scene, what's either an action scene, dialogue, or exposition that is supposed to enlighten us with something else plot-wise, it's followed by like 5 minutes of him moping in an alley or in a car or in the cabin, right? And then he'll do something kind of, I don't know, badass per se, but it doesn't feel rewarding because he doesn't portray that characteristic throughout the movie. Instead, I feel like he's doing this method actor holding on to the sadness and agony of the loss of his girlfriend, and that's what's weighing his performance down. Instead of going full vengeance, which it's supposed to feel like, he goes into like this mopiness, and I hated every second of it, especially like when there was a cool action scene, I felt like I was watching a different actor. It felt like it wasn't earned. And our critics really dive into that too. Another big problem I have with this film is just like Bloodline, the film was co-written, adapted by the author of the novel. This is like three now that we've covered where the original writer of the work has a stab at the script. And I think there's a reason why, for the most part, novelists are novelists and screenwriters are screenwriters. They have a hard time adapting their own work into something that's going to fit in a 90-minute window. And they probably leave out really important exposition because it's not going to like fit the film. But then we lose out important topics or plot points that were in the novel. I feel like they're probably too attached to things they really like in their story that they don't give enough sinew, connective tissue to pull the story together. That's literally like the third time we've covered a film this year where the author also helped with the screenplay and totally botched it.
Well, they love the dialogue. They want to sound smarter than what it's going to appear on screen. They want to have their favorite lines. They want to have their most in-depth lines given. And we see that with Plummer and Savage on the train talking literature, right? But here's where I think it really loses the audience, and me in particular, is the first act. There is no build. There is no chemistry. It's situational because we get that 80s mellow music leading up to the big event of a situational violent killing of his wife. But we don't really have them on screen together to really build that. And for a 2-hour runtime, I would have much rather cut out the snow-filled bank of a shooting and got some more of the relationship of him and his wife. There is no hook to draw us in other than just a pure situation of watching a woman get shot point blank. To me, that doesn't buy me in because I don't know if it's our times now that we've seen it time and time again in cinema, but in the 81, they're banking on just that pure gunshot to just say, yep, I get it. This guy deserves to go on a vengeance. He needs to get justice, but we're not bought in on it. And I think the more interesting aspects of this movie is the same thing I have with the current version is we get the CIA conspiracy. We get what's happening behind closed doors. And I wanted more of that. I found that more interesting of having the prolonged dialogue of what they're doing, how they're going to cover it up, then Savage's character. Heller is not interesting to me, and everything going on around him just seems to be more interesting. And if I were to look at this, I've never read the source material, but if I were to assume that we had more intricate play by the CIA going around Savage to really make it more interesting, but here he is just a mere prop.
The first 11 minutes will absolutely shock you. The last 11 minutes will rivet you to your seat. I agree. The first 11 minutes of the movie, I think, are actually really effective, where it is this, you know, hostage situation. It's like, may as well be Munich. You know, it's one of those type of things, ending with a very violent death. And it's well shot. I feel like there's a great energy, and there's suspense, and there's terror there. And then the last 11 minutes, which is essentially a shootout in a chandelier museum. I can't tell what it is. There's chandeliers and glass everywhere. It's really well shot, and there's a lot of tension there. That pisses me off when you have a good start to a film and a good end to a film, and then nothing in between. That really, really gets me, because they probably show you all the best stuff from those two scenes in the trailer, because that's the only thing that's going to grab you. Everything else is just nonsense. And we kind of talked about the political and paranoia thrillers in last week's episode, movies like Parallax View, 3 Days of the Condor, where there is supposed to be like this suspense, espionage, the paranoia. This film feels like it's supposed to be more of that, but instead it isn't. It's like this one man's journey, and we are stuck with him, and he's just not interesting. And I can't really wait until we get into the critics' reviews, because they really have nailed it on the head. So before we get into that, I just want to ask you, is there anything redeeming for you about this film?
It's hard, because this is going to be a one and done for me.
Yeah.
Because again, there's nothing I'm taking away from it. And if I were to say anything, it'd be Jared's direction. And I agree, the direction is on point, but even with some conversations we've had in the past, is you can easily distract a direction for nothing that happens from the cast or the dialogue and make it look good. So, but here, the direction isn't strong enough to overpower what everything else is happening on screen. So to me, I can appreciate the attempt at being, let me rephrase. I can appreciate the premise, but the premise is going to be solely from the source material. So I can't give the film credit on that. So to me, no, there is nothing redeeming here, because even when you take Plummer's character and make it almost unwatchable every time he tries to attempt an accent and just mumbles with his face down in a desk, that's the point that I say I'm done.
Right. I like I said, I liked the energy of the opening scene, and I liked the energy of the final shootout at the end. Everything in the middle was boring. Even the things that I would generally like, the savagery of some of the assassinations that he actually does, the scene where he is able to catch up with the man and the woman that were in charge of the terrorist attack at the beginning, and he gives her a poison pill. Like, there's a savagery to that that I like, and then it just kind of stops. It fizzles out. It doesn't allow itself to be more brutal. Like, I feel like Tony Scott's Man on Fire is one of the best movies that really shows the savagery of revenge. And I feel like this was supposed to be that, but it doesn't even try. And I'm sure that those scenes were brutal in the novel. I haven't seen the remake. Maybe scenes like that are a little bit more brutal, or let's not say brutal. Let's say that there is a total lack and loss of empathy for that character, where it is just a pure revenge machine, right? I'm even down for that. But Savage doesn't give us enough energy. It almost feels like it's a chore to kill these people instead of something that he really wants to do and needs to do to feel that vengeance. And that's where it lacks. None of that's there. It almost feels like he's literally, oh, I got to go kill another person now. That's how it feels.
He has one moment in here with his facial expression that did stay with me. And that's when we have the pool scene. And he has maybe a split second facial expression. And that's what I'm going to take from this movie, a split half a second facial expression, where when he is about to press that button, he has almost a fear before he ducks behind the screen. That is, in a 2-hour runtime, probably the best half a second performance from him in this.
Yeah, I agree. All right, well, let's hear what these guys have to say about it. This was Gene's to bring to the episode.
Our next film, The Amateur, stars John Savage as a computer expert working for the CIA. He has nothing to do with the Clerk and Dagger stuff of the agency. He just does the agency's computer work. His girlfriend, a freelance photographer working in Europe, gets caught in the middle of a terrorist raid, and she is killed. Savage expects the CIA to help him find the killers, and when they refuse, he uses information from the computer that he is privy to blackmail the agency. But the film is so confusing and so torturously boring that I never really could get interested in whether he hit his targets or not. What's wrong? Just about everything. Savage has nervous mannerisms that are very annoying for a lead character. I think he's got a retainer in his mouth. It's some kind of gimmick, always spitting. And the labyrinthian plot is so convoluted that there are at least a dozen chances for Savage to get killed easily early in the film, and he doesn't. And the bottom line is that this film really builds up the CIA as all-powerful, totally sinister, but they simply can't bump off this one guy. I didn't believe it for a minute.
He hit so many points there. He said something really interesting about the mannerisms of Savage. So as I was watching this movie, I felt like Savage was trying to put out a lot of John Voight energy. And honestly, I much would have rather have seen 1980s John Voight in this role, because he would have brought that energy to it, right? I feel like this is a bad caricature of John Voight, even to the mild mannerisms, like he said, always spitting. He was always like clenching his teeth or biting his lip or doing like nervous things with his eyes. It feels so performative and not genuine that's what really took me out of the character. I almost felt like he was acting like an actor, not acting like a character.
100%. He said something that's interesting to me, and we've seen it, especially in the last month of movies with us, is the movie is confusing, and the movie can be confusing, but when you are just presented with something of just pure nothingness, of just pure boredom, your brain just shuts off. And we've seen movies like this before where they're just so dull that you just don't care to follow along. And even if you miss it for 5 to 10 minutes of kind of what you're watching, you get lost in the movie. And this is one of those that if you're going into that you haven't had like 10 cups of coffee and you're really zeroed in on everything that's being said, it is confusing on what these characters are going to do. So, and Siskel and Ebert, they thought Mission Impossible, the original, was confusing. This is tenfold above that because, again, we talked about it. There is nothing important that's said. There's nothing that hooks you to follow along with these characters. So to me, I think Gene nailed it on just that aspect, that this is a spy thriller with no thrills and no spy.
I mean, we had the exact same conversation last week with Bloodline, right? This feels very similar, where like this is a thriller with no thrills. Like that was a thriller with no thrills, just some cheap snuff film strangulation scenes. And other than that, nothing. I felt that they were very similar in vibe and tone and disappointment, 100%. And Roger has something very similar to say as well.
I didn't either. It seemed to me this movie was a clone of about every spy thriller I'd seen for the last 15 years. The guy who wants revenge, the CIA is going to set him up and double-cross him. The KGB is following him. The Czechoslovakian secret police are following them. The guy, he's got six security agencies on his tail, and yet he can walk through the streets of Prague with a drawn gun and nobody notices him. Furthermore, to get into Czechoslovakia, he's going through this mine tunnel, which they never think to, they leave it open between the two borders.
I know, that's the most
amazing. They have 20 tourist flights a day into Prague. If the CIA can't forge a visa, they might as well shut up shop. I thought the entire movie was so improbable, I could never believe it.
So one of my favorite movies from the 80s is a Walter Matthau film called Hopscotch, where he plays this ex-CIA guy who is going to write like his memoirs and expose about the CIA. And the whole point of that movie is that he's not even like that great of an agent. He's just better than the other agents because they're so incompetent. And it really plays for the laughs of like, oh, our government agency that's in charge of secrets and espionage and national security are really just a bunch of assholes and imbeciles, right? They're just that much smarter than the Russians. And that's what they were playing at, right? This feels very similar in sense, but it's not tongue-in-cheek. It's not supposed to be funny. But he's totally right. The incompetence of the CIA and the incompetence of the KGB agents, it should be laughable. It should be a joke, but it isn't. They just let this dude wander around, gun drawn. Everyone's supposed to know who he is by face, yet he just walks around willy-nilly and only gets recognized by like two guys, right? The meantime, he's like just in and out of everywhere. I thought the whole point of him being the amateur is that he was always going to be on the run because he does not know how to conceal himself like a spy would. But instead, he's getting away with shit that like a spy would have a hard time getting away with. And he just kind of walks in and out of these situations. That is laughable. Like, at least create a world where I can believe that there is stakes involved. And I felt there were very few stakes involved. I never felt that he was truly in danger, even in the scene where he's running in the basement from the one assassin and has the one up on him. Like, he doesn't even know how to handle a gun and he still has a one up on this guy. If it's supposed to be satire, if there's supposed to be irony to why he's better than this dude because he's an amateur, then it's lost on the audience because it was lost on me. And I like to think that I'm a pretty perceptive film watcher.
Well, it is laughable because I think I'm surprised Ebert didn't bring this up is I think it became comical when anytime there was a car chase, there always had to be somebody running into a phone booth, then running into a car. And there's only three cars on the road and they're like tailgate to tailgate. And we even get that one scene with Elizabeth where he's in the car and he's asking her, have you ever tailed someone? She goes, no,
like, how would he know?
Pretty good job. There's literally, there's nobody on the road. It's literally three cars in these narrow streets and these tiny cars. So how does nobody notice? Or why don't they just pull him over? Nobody's going to care. They're the only ones on the road. So there are so many holes in this that are comical, and I think it's almost an insult to the audience that they actually try and portray it as serious, because they even nailed jokes like, I know these streets like the back of my hand or the front of my hand, or it's a slice of cake, piece of cake. These are stupid. Like, if you're in danger and you're tailing someone and there's a sense of danger, there shouldn't be any comic relief. Those are the moments that add tensity, and it never does. So on top of that, you have all these improbable situational pieces that just go in Savage's favor that really never add that element. And the insulting piece of it, they add the music in with the high trebles when to kind of simulate the danger piece of it. And that's even more laughable because we're not bought in by the time the music track actually goes into those situations.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I just feel that the movie has so many misdirections. And again, like Bloodline, it's like I have no desire to read the novel, but I am curious to know like what the novel left out or what the film left out of this adaptation, because like I feel like there's so much that we don't get to see that would solve so much. And then the lack of proper interpretation of what the book is supposed to be, that it just feels like they're making it up as it goes along. It's just not a good movie. That's two in a row. two in a row, man, where I was just like, you said it perfectly. It was a struggle to stay focused and watch this movie. And I watched it on my elliptical bike downstairs on the big screen. So I knew that I was in place, burning calories, doing something productive with my time. And I still wanted to fall asleep watching this movie.
That's different than me. The first time I watched it, I had like four shots in me and I said, no way. Then I had four cups of coffee in me the next day and I still couldn't get it. So to me, this is one that just, I think when it comes to the original source material with the author, he highlighted lines that he just wanted in this movie and they had to work around it to make it work. So the worst people to actually be part of a screenplay is the original author, because he has an attachment to particular moments, particular lines. So he has his own vision versus what a cinematic experience would be. So to me, I think there's a lot of misdirections here, but it comes with control of the dialogue.
Agreed. They kind of finish up the conversation here.
And you know what? It only comes up, all these questions, there are movies, great movies with loopholes in them, They only come up when the character is not interesting.
No, that's right.
Michael
right
Caine and Richard Burton have played similar characters, and they were such interesting presence on the screen. I have to fault Savage. I mean, it's a gimmick performance.
He's given some very good performances. I do not think he's not right for this kind of a role at this time. Anyway.
Okay. Walter Matthau did it, Robert Redford did it in 3 Days of the Condor, Warren Beatty did it in Parallax View. All those movies have such high stakes and you feel the fear, the tension, the uncomfortableness of the main character, where this guy, I don't know, like maybe what they were trying to go for was he's lost it all. What else does he have to lose? That's why he's so nonchalant about everything. But that's not interesting. You know, maybe if he was a total badass, then I could buy it, but he's not. He's just bland. It's a bland performance and it's a bland movie. When it comes down to the critique, well, dude, this is one of those situations where it's like, I'm not going to say that Gene Siskel is being overly critical about the film. He is 100% on point with all of the critiques that he gave, especially the performance and especially the loopholes that go nowhere in the script. That's what kills this movie. And he didn't even have to sound too dickish about it when he said it. It was very straightforward. And he wasn't walking back anything or talking in circles like he does sometimes. So I'm going to give him a solid A on this. I agree.
100%. Gene, this is probably one of his best reviews we've done with Gene Siskel. But I can't review Roger as good because Gene nailed all the points.
He did.
So there was nothing to disagree with. Roger did point out that this is like every other spy thriller, et cetera, et cetera. And I think I'm going to disagree because this one doesn't try to be, and it doesn't try to be anything. This is where it really tries to be in the 80s, just bland. So there is no thrills to it. So I wouldn't compare this to every other spy movie that's come out. I say it tries to make an underdog with a new premise, but the underdog is lame, and I think they don't do anything with it. And I wanted Roger to focus more on that, not just the Savage performance, but the written character itself, because the written character doesn't do anything. And when it comes to the premise, it had a chance to, but it's still on point with a lot of the agreement that Gene said. So I can't take away from that. So I'm going to give him a 3-star. I think that's fair, because he does nail most of the points and some frustrations in the review.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. Yeah, like I said, I think there are movies that do this better. I mean, hell, even The Man Who Knew Too Little does it better with someone who doesn't know what they're doing involved in espionage. That is the biggest problem with this movie, is like, I'm sure this character read very well on paper and in the book, but whatever the translation was, it just doesn't work. And like I said, I haven't seen the remake. I'm not sure if Rami Malek does a better job with it, but I can imagine that at least he shows some life behind the eyes. There's no life here. It's dull. It's dead. And that's the last I'm going to say about this movie. I'm not going to watch it ever again.
I think the one problem that both films are going to have is that there is a hard interpretation of where to take this character. Malek does his best, but at the same time, we run into the same pattern of, where do we take an underdog in situations to make it interesting that doesn't feel like it's just a premise and nothing more? And to me, this was a premise and nothing more than that. So the execution when it comes to both films just isn't there.
Okay, yeah, I agree. All right, so next week I am bringing to the show the film Everybody's All American, starring Dennis Quaid, Jessica Lange, directed by Taylor Hackford. It's a film that I've known about, never seen, and so this is kind of like my last contribution to this discoveries era of this podcast, where we're looking at movies that we haven't seen before that Siskel and Ebert reviewed. But we both agreed it's time to get out of that and get into some old familiar favorites, so stay tuned for those. We're going back to some of the old comfort films and getting out of this like sticky, murky waters that we're in of, let's take a gamble on this movie. Is it going to suck or is it going to blow us away? And so far, I don't think any of our picks have really blown us away.
100% no. So, you know what? For us, it was a good premise, but I think with your pick, I've never seen it, but it's a great cast, and I think it's going to be a good segue, given the cast, into some people's favorites, I would say.
So I have to say, like, out of these, you know, what, 6 or 7 films that we've done over the course of this Discoveries era, I'm going to say that my favorite of them was Serial. And mostly because it was entertaining to me. It made me laugh. I liked the jokes. I liked the relevance of what it would be today versus when it was back then. But all the other ones, man, I feel like they were just pretty dry. And I don't know, none of them really stuck with me as much as Serial did. What was yours of this run? Fade to Black, probably.
Fade to Black is probably going to be my favorite, but it's hard for me to turn away Stowe from Blink. I just love her so much. But Fade to Black is definitely my go-to.
Great performance in a not-so-great movie. I will give that to Madeline Stowe for Blink, for sure.
100%.
All right, cool, cool. All right, well, everyone, thank you for trudging through the waters of these films that we've gone through. I think it was a good experiment to get some more movies into our repertoire, but there is a reason why we spent our first year picking movies that we liked talking about. It's because there are movies that we generally liked, at least one of us did, and then we could debate, right? We could debate, we could have discourse of why we like it, why we don't like it. Most of these were hard to talk about because for the most part, we did not like them. And we're not generally shit-talking people on our podcasts. So it's a challenge for us to, like, I want to be complimentary of a film. And why is the film making it so hard for me? So yeah, let's get back to the comfort films for sure.
I really miss the debate. I miss doing jumping jacks ready for a debate before a show. So I am glad we're getting
right
back into some movies.
We're like, the last 6 episodes is like, I didn't like this. Yeah, I didn't like this ever. Good night,
I
everybody.
I ain't agreeing, you know? With you. So it's going to be a fun next month.
Please rate, review, leave 5 stars to Back to the Balcony on Apple or Spotify. Don't forget to write a review on YouTube. Like, follow, subscribe, all that good stuff. You can follow me, Antonio, at the Cult Worthy Cinema Podcast at thecultworthy.com. And you can follow my co-host, Justin, over at
themoviewire.com.
And we will see you next week.
See you next week.